Hello, everyone. Welcome to a special bonus podcast where we, and by we, I mean Courtney and myself, are going to talk about A Wrinkle in Time for our DMH book club. Say hi, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
And we're going to not go with any music or anything today, but if you want to take a trip maybe to a far-off world, a new planet, stay in the same solar system though, head on over to meitravel.com and our experts there will get you on your way to whatever land you want to visit. So like I briefly mentioned, we are going to review A Wrinkle in Time. This is our culmination podcast for our DMH book club. And remember, you can go on Facebook and find the DMH Book Club group there by searching for that. And we've been doing this, what, Courtney, for 4 weeks now?
Yeah, this is our first month.
Our first month, when we heard the movie was coming out, we were really excited about the movie. It looks really cool. So we said, why not go back to the source material and kind of find out where the inspiration came from? And this will focus only on the book, because the movie hasn't come out yet, but we'll kind of maybe do a little hypothetical stuff towards the end when we talk about what the movie might bring, what we want to see in the movie. Okay, so I have a little background stuff with this novel. It was written by Madeline L'Engle. It was published in 1962. She said she was writing it between like 1950, 1960-ish. She was very big into science and did a lot of reading on physics and astrophysics, which kind of lends itself to this book because during the time that it was being written, just to kind of put yourself in the context, the Cold War and the space race were in full swing. Nobody had yet gone to the moon. Nobody had taken a step on the moon. So even though this book talks about interplanetary travel and a whole bunch of different dimensions, nobody had actually stepped foot on another planet or moon in this time period. Another interesting fact I found, Barbie was launched in 1959, which I kind of feel ties into some other stuff that goes on in this book that we'll talk about later on. L'Engle brought her book. She initially said to over 40 publishers, but then kind of cut that down to 26. So either way, quite a bit of people she went to. Many of them told her it was too different, too difficult for children. They questioned if it wasn't a children's book or wasn't an adult book, really. And it dealt overtly with the problem of evil. So there was a lot of pushback on that, but finally, she was able to find her publisher and get her book out there. Interestingly enough, I think between 1990 and 2000, this book was still the 22nd most banned book. Some saying that it was challenging religious beliefs, which I guess we can also get into.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
But that is fascinating.
From somebody who L'Engle was like a devout evangelist and, you know, really kind of has some blatant themes in here, I think that it's interesting that it was on the list for challenging religious beliefs.
I have read some stuff about, I guess, some of the sci-fi elements being a challenge to traditional Christian beliefs. I guess that might speak to why it could have been a banned book, but I can't imagine. That's insane.
Especially because like 2000 is so recent. Like you would think that at that time it wasn't, I don't know. I mean, and to be 22nd, like that's kind of high also.
It is very high.
But all right, Courtney, you want to run down just our characters, our main characters here that we'll kind of see popping up in our discussion, just for any of those who maybe haven't read it or don't remember if they are listening to this after the fact and they don't remember all the characters that they've encountered.
Yeah, so our main character is Meg Murray, or Megan Murray, however you prefer to say that. And she's a young girl who she's looking for her dad. And then we have Charles Wallace, who's her younger brother. He's 5 years old in this book, and he's basically too smart for his own good and potentially has some magical powers, which is never fully explored. I think we might get into that a little bit more a little later too.
Yeah.
And then we have Calvin, who seemingly comes out of nowhere and ends up being one of our three major characters in the book. And Meg's love interest by the end. So that's fascinating. And then our other three major players that we see are Mrs. What's It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which. So essentially, these are, I think probably the best way to describe them would be as our guardian angels of the book. Mm-hmm. And I think I've seen that described that way elsewhere. They all have very different personalities and abilities, and we learn various things about them throughout the book. But they are kind of the, I guess, spirit guides for these kids as they go on the journey to find Mr. Murray, who is another character in the book that we never really learned too much about. We're going to get into that, I'm sure, very in depth a little later. I don't know what more to say about Mr. Murray.
Yeah.
And then we have Mrs. Murray. So we only meet her briefly at the beginning and then briefly at the end. So Mr. and Mrs. Murray are both scientists, and Mrs. Murray is in the process of looking for the father, essentially, as part of her research. Again, all we learn about Mrs. Murray is that she's beautiful. So cool. So she's another one of our players. And then other than that, we have a couple kind of secondary characters. We have the man with the red eyes, who's basically kind of the gateway person to It, who is not really a person.
It's like a giant brain.
A giant brain, which is super strange. Can't wait to see how that's going to go down in the movie.
Mm.
And then the only other character I would say we have, I don't even know if it's really a character, but the black thing kind of plays a role as a character in the book, but is more like a presence.
Yeah.
And a person itself.
Yeah. And we also have, tertiary characters that are briefly in there. We have the Happy Medium and Aunt Beast. And Aunt Beast is one I do want to talk about later on when we talk about the movie, because there's just some interesting stuff going on there.
For sure.
But yeah, so those are that's pretty much our entire cast list. I mean, you have also, Megan, Charles have, in between them, they have the twins, their brothers, Sandy and Dennis. They kind of classify them as like the normal children, whereas Meg and Charles Wallace are not quote unquote normal. So they, again, like Mrs. Murray, kind of pop up in the beginning and then disappear until like the very end of the book.
Yeah, we kind of get the whole like jocks versus nerds thing with those sets of children.
Yeah, and they kind of have stepped in a little bit to play kind of father's role as like protectors. And again, they don't really get explored, I think, as much as maybe, I don't even think it's needed, but they're not really major.
No, I think their purpose in the book is to kind of be like a voice of reason or just like a neutral character, because they really don't serve any purpose.
Yeah, that's very true. It is weird. I know when we did the book club reading, we broke it down, you know, 4 weeks, three chapters each week, and it was very interesting to see how significantly different the book like went as we broke it up. We didn't even do it on purpose, but I feel like the breaking up of the book kind of, it almost made it like very different books each time. You know, we went from like being very, like the first half of the book, you're very grounded and you know, you're on Earth, obviously, and you're very like just into these people's lives. And then you get away from that, but in such a way that it's like, it's almost like jolting. You know,
it is jolting the way that I don't feel like there's much. There was a very long transition getting from Earth to where the dad was. And then like everything at the beginning was pretty quick. And then everything at the end was super fast.
Yeah. Yeah. The ending was very, very fast. We'll get there because, yeah, it kind of was jarring how quickly it quote unquote wrapped up. I don't know. We'll talk about that. Okay, so I guess as books go, they have themes, and this theme This book had a couple of themes. I think one that's pretty obvious. It definitely has the battle between light and dark, good, evil, good and evil, you know, however you want to see it. A lot of times, goodness and evil are characterized as lightness and darkness, and you have that battle between the two. And like Courtney had mentioned, like, there is an entity in the book called the Black Thing. So there is a darkness that does descend in this universe. And there is that whole section where the characters do mention that the darkness has been being fought throughout the universe over time, and it is being fought on Earth. And they do mention a lot of people who have fought it over time. It kind of starts out with, I guess, if you're coming at it from a religious perspective, like the most obvious, you know, Jesus, the light fighting the dark. But then they even go into mentioning other religious figures like Buddha and
scientific and artistic figures as well.
Yeah. Then they go into the scientists, Copernicus, they go into, you know, Michelangelo, Leonardo, Da Vinci, like the artists and stuff, and how all of these things, not just the religious figures, but even the scientists and the religious people, everyone's been fighting this darkness. But it's been happening, obviously, for a long time on Earth.
Right. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong or if you see it differently, but I feel like the opposite of the darkness that we have is the Mrs. Witch who, and what's it? I feel like they are the representation of the light side. Because mm-hmm. really, like, the Black Thing and, you know, going further with Mr. Red, is that his name? Red, his name.
Yeah, the, like, man with red eyes, but yeah. Red.
And then it, like, you really have a big picture of the dark side, mm-hmm. but you don't necessarily get much representation of the light side unless you're really looking at it from the perspective of the misses in the book.
Yeah, and I almost feel like the three children, Calvin, Charles Wallace, and Meg, like, they're supposed to be these new champions of the light, and I feel like, I don't know, I don't feel like the book had much of a payoff with that. What do you think?
I don't think it did at all either, because, and that was one of the things I said early on, was if we don't find out what's special about these kids by the end, I'm going to be really upset. Mm. And you don't find that stuff out. You don't figure out why they're special and why they're important and why they fit into the category of people like Jesus and Aristotle and Buddha and, like, all these people that they list.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. It doesn't make sense that these kids, and that Meg specifically, and the way that Meg comes to the decision that, like, she's the one who has to do it. There's no explanation or real payoff in that way.
Yeah. I felt like, especially in Meg's case, like, it was just like, oh, all of a sudden, like, yeah, no, I'm going to do it. And I'm the only one who can do it for whatever reason. We never know. And that also frustrated me, because a little earlier in the book, we had the line where she was given a gift and her gift was her faults. And then it was, like, never explained. We don't know what her faults were, how they were a gift. And I'm not sure how everyone, like, knows that she has to be this champion, you know?
Well, and I don't think everyone does know. I think she comes to the determination and everyone else around her is like, no, like, this is a really bad idea. I'm not going to let you do this. And then all of a sudden she's just like, oh, well, it has to be me. Well,
but the misses kind of, like, agree with her. Like, yeah, it has to be you.
Yeah, they know that it has to be her. So I don't know. Maybe that's something that's explored in the later books, because, I mean, we do kind of hint that Meg has something special about her in the same way that Charles Wallace and Calvin do. Mm. Maybe that's part of it and it's explained later on, but it certainly isn't explained in this book.
No, and you know what's frustrating? Because the second book, I mean, there is it's a 5-book series, but the second book wasn't published until 11 years after. So unless she knew going in, like, I'm going to have a series, like, that is a long time in between your first and second book. And then the rest of the books weren't as spaced out. So it's like, what were you thinking when you wrote this? Like, did you know you were going to get a second one? Like,
I don't think there's any chance she knew. I wrote that down in my notes. Yeah. I really think, like, this was her idea. Like, this was her standalone thought. If she sent it in to 40, 26, however many publishers she did and got all those rejections, there was no way she was thinking far enough ahead to think, okay, I'm going to end this. This is going to be open-ended, and then I'm going to continue this on for four more books.
Yeah, so, like, why don't we get that concrete explanation of this is why Meg is special or how she's special? Like, I don't know. That frustrated me, I think, even just as much as, like, not finding out what the deal is with Charles Wallace. I mean, I had all these fantastic ideas in my head, like, you know, maybe he wasn't even really, like, their child. He was, like, you know, an angel sent to them or whatever. Like, there was, like, so much that my brain was doing with it. And then it was just like, oh, I don't know. He's just a really special little boy. But we don't really get it fully explained. We get instances where he does show his abilities, definitely more than Meg does. But, like, it's never clear.
Yeah, you never get any... You just have, my interpretation of it was that there was telepathy involved of some sort. But from there, I mean, I think there was also some sort of, beyond telepathy, like the ability to, like, kind of feel things and sense things as well. So it's just not explained. It's simply put, not explained. And there's no way she thought at the end of this book, oh, I'm going to write four more of these and explain it.
Yeah.
It's just poorly explained. Period.
I agree on that. Because, yeah, that I think that was the most frustrating thing was, like, you had so much potential. And then I feel like the ball was just dropped. Or, like, she had ideas in the beginning and then they were just tossed by the wayside to give it somewhat of a conclusion. Like, I don't know.
And that's not the only thing that happens with. Yeah. That happens with a ton of things in this book. So it's definitely strange.
Yeah. And what's weird is... You know, you even get, again, like, she hints at the thing with Calvin, too. Like, Calvin might have some special ability. And again, just completely forgotten. So, I don't know. I mean, there's definitely the clear battle between light and dark going on in this universe. But the champions of the light are I don't know. In my opinion, I don't think they're held up to be great champions. And also, I don't think there is a big battle and defeat. Like, you know, it's not like Lord of the Rings where you have, like, a very specific, you know, the good guys versus the bad guys and this is the battle and this is the conclusion and, you know, this is how it turns out. Like, there is no battle. There's no conclusion, in my opinion. Like, as far as we know, right. The black thing's still out there.
Well, exactly. There's no, it's not fully defeated. The dad just comes back home. So we have, yeah, there's no defeat of any kind. And then I think the weirdest part is... The witches, or the Miss Witch Who and What's It, I don't even know what to call them. The Mrs.
W's I've seen.
W's, that works.
Yeah.
At the end of the book, they kind of turn into jerks. Like, the way that they start acting at the end is so contrary to the way their characters were at the beginning. So it's like, at the beginning, they're nice and they're, like, guiding the kids and doing things for them. And then at the end, all of a sudden, they're like, no, sorry. Like,
yeah, like, no, this is the way it's got to be. Sorry.
Yeah.
Bye. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just really weird.
It is. And, like, if you had given me even, like, a line where it's like, our time is brief, like, we can't, you know, discuss this, or just something a little bit more to explain, like, why they all of a sudden turned into very snappy kind of, you know, women, you know, like, it's just they're handling the situation so much different than they had in the beginning, where in the beginning, you know, they would explain things to the children and they obviously took their time explaining things because it doesn't take, you know, it took a long time to understand even what they were and everything like that. So, yeah, it was a really weird turn at the end.
It was definitely really strange. And I don't know if maybe they were just thinking, well, our task is done now, so, like, peace out.
Yeah,
but it's like, just that's how it seemed.
It's like a terrible way for, like, if you're guiding somebody to be, like, if a teacher's just like, okay, nah, I gave you everything, like, see ya, like, but you didn't give me everything, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
they were weird in that aspect. Yeah, the other I guess theme that you can kind of pull out of this is conformity and the status quo. We definitely see that a lot in the beginning. I guess this kind of ties into a lot of the description that goes on in the beginning. But the description that goes on in the beginning really got under my skin because it focused heavily on appearance. And for me, that never got a good payoff. There was never a point for me in the end of the book where I was like, you know what? Meg isn't as beautiful as her mother. Meg doesn't, you know, see herself as everyone else. And, you know, all these physical appearance things that are brought up in the beginning, it's never then at the end, like, despite all of this, she is, you know, the special one, or she is like the savior. Like, there is no, you know, point to hammer home where it's like, okay, but it doesn't matter how you look, you are still special inside or anything. Like, there was nothing like that for
me. In fact, it was like, it was the opposite of that, in that the way she's validated in the end is to be kissed by a boy that she has just met.
Yeah, it's like, wait, why? Like, why is that how we judge that this person is worthy, you know? Like, oh, because a guy likes her? Like, okay, now she's good enough? Like, whereas especially in the beginning, you built it up so much that, you know, she couldn't compare with all these other people because she wasn't as gorgeous or whatever. And, like, now it's like, well, okay, but, like, shouldn't it not matter then, her physical? Like, and I don't think her character was written well enough to justify the kiss in terms of like, oh, well, he fell in love with her spirit. Because honestly, like, she was a whiny little brat half the time. I mean, most of the time it was, you know, in her head. But even so, like, she, to me, didn't do anything to justify either him falling in love with or like with her because of her, you know, her determination or her gifts or faults or whatever you want to call it. But I don't know, it felt really flat.
Well, he fell in love with her because of her eyes, remember? And then told her to cover him up because he didn't want anybody else to see him.
That was oh god,
yeah, absolutely infuriating. I really think the only reason that the kiss happened at the end was basically, it was just a wrap-up point. Like, we find out at the end of the book, the whole theme, it's all about love. You can defeat anything with love, which that alone was very obnoxious to me. Like, why does that have to be? I mean, that's a very obvious point. Couldn't we have, like, done something a little more interesting? But I just think it has to do with that specifically. She decided that the thing that was going to beat everything else was love. So I don't know, maybe Calvin kissing her gave her the power to, I don't know.
But, like, again, like, okay, even if you want to, you know, do the whole love conquers all thing, give me, like, almost like a Beauty and the Beast moment. Like, it doesn't matter about your outward appearance. It's what's inside that counts. So, like, give me something where he's like, you know, you have such a strong spirit, like, you can do this. Or, like, I don't know, something to justify all this stuff in the beginning that focused on how she looks versus how everybody else looks and how that doesn't matter. You know, because you're so good on the inside, your spirit is what counts. Like, just give me something better than what was given to me, pretty much.
Maybe that's how it was supposed to read, and it just didn't read that way. Because, like, that she makes the decision to go and, like, defeat the thing or whatever, go back to Charles Wallace, and then he kisses her. So maybe the idea was, he has fallen in love with her brave spirit, but that is certainly not how it read.
It's not how it read. And honestly, like, that act of bravery was such a quick, like, turn for her. There was nothing like leading up to it. And I don't know, it just felt like unjustified. Like,
it wasn't necessary. Like, what it did is it detracted from her decision to go save Charles Wallace. It took away from that moment.
Yeah.
Instead of allowing her to be independent and strong and making a strong decision, it just took away from that moment for me.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like Meg's character... See, and what's weird is, if you're going to make it a children's book, then honestly, those types of things should be blatant. Because, you know, a kid's not going to read that nuanced, you know, he fell in love with her spirit, like, she's so brave. Like, the kid's not going to, you know, no junior high school kid, I'm sorry, like, I don't think they're going to read into that.
Yeah, and I don't know if a kid, like, does a kid really need there to be a love story between, like, these small children?
No. No, and that's also, like, weird.
Yeah, it's weird. And I think that the book in general, I think Jennifer was reading this to her daughter, who's under 10, mm-hmm. maybe, yeah. if I'm correct.
Yeah.
an under 10-year-old is not going to be interested in reading about some guy grabbing a girl and kissing her. Like, it's weird. I don't know who she was aiming the book toward. Maybe that's part of the reason she got rejected so many times by publishers. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it can definitely be dense, you know, in ways that are not, I think, for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Meg's whole thing in the beginning is how she doesn't fit that status quo of a beautiful girl. So she, you know, and I even think she made even comments about how she wasn't like, you know, like she's not like a cool kid because she's really good at math and stuff. Like, so there is all of that stuff that I feel like for a junior high school kid could be a cool theme to kind of explore, that you don't have to look like everyone else, or be, you can be a jock, you can be a brain, you can be whatever you want, and you can still do amazing things. Like, but I don't think that point necessarily was that. I think that's something that, like, nowadays a teacher would like pull out and be like, this is what it means, guys, here you go. Whereas I don't know if it's necessarily something that just reading it on your own as a kid you would get.
Right. Do you think that all of the focus on how beautiful Mrs. Murray is a device to like make it more apparent that Meg is not that? Do you think that was why the focus was on that?
I think so. And it's hard because if you're writing it from a young girl's perspective, I could get that whole like, okay, you view your grown mother as being so beautiful, and while you're still trying to like get into your, you know, appearance, you don't find yourself beautiful. Like, I get that whole component to it. It probably speaks to a lot of people. It definitely spoke to me. But like, again, there is no end to that, or, you know, flip side to that, where it's like, oh, okay, well, it doesn't matter what you look like now. It doesn't matter what your outward appearance looks like, whatever. Like, it's all about your spirit. Like, there is no.
And the payoff ends up being, it doesn't matter what you look like, a boy will still kiss you.
Yeah. And that's all that matters, is that the guy kisses you, right?
Yeah. That's it.
That's all you need.
Life's over. Now you can go rescue your baby brother.
Yeah. It frustrated me so much because you think like it has such these, you know, it does have like a lot of strong things going for it. You know, it's written by a female writer. It's sci-fi with a female protagonist, which doesn't happen. So it's like there's all these good things going for it. And like, I just wanted to see it achieve more, you know, or give me more than what it gave me.
Yeah, I agree. Do you maybe want to get into the questions that we got from the
book? Yeah, let's do the questions.
Okay, so we put up a post in the DMH book club group and asked for some themes or questions or comments that you guys had on the books. And we had a couple of responses. We're hoping in the future when more of you join us, we'll get some more questions and responses on those. Mm-hmm. The first one we had was from Jennifer Vale, who was reading this to her daughter. And she had read it when she was small as well. And she was asking, essentially, like, not asking, but she wanted us to discuss the pacing of the book, which we have done a little bit. But I think she agrees with Melissa and I that this book was, it seemingly like it's building up to this big rescue of Meg's dad. And we have the first 9 chapters where essentially nothing happens and we're getting to the place where he is. Mm-hmm. And then within the last 3 chapters, it's 3 chapters literally. And we find the dad, Charles Wallace goes bonkers, and then we end up back home again.
Yeah, it was a lot of buildup and then a very brief conclusion. It's like a roller coaster. Like, you're going up, 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 up. And then, like, the drop is really quick. Like, and sometimes the drop is good in the payoff because that rush is really great. And this one, it was like you dropped 5 feet and then you fell flat and then you dropped, like, another 3 feet. Like, it was just like a meh.
Oh, yeah. And they built up the character of Mr. Murray so much. Like, the kids were talking about what a great man he was. And, you know, you're expecting, like, when you get there and you get to meet him, you're expecting him to be this really spectacular person and for him to be really special and super smart. And then you get there and you find out that this guy is on this planet because they didn't know how to test her. And he decided that he was going to go and randomly test her somewhere after the first guy didn't come back. after a whole year from trying to test her. So not only does this guy come across as really stupid, he also makes a bunch of decisions that essentially end up with his son getting left on another planet and putting his other, his daughter in danger. So he just is a giant letdown once you get down to it.
And I think that's also like a big thing that I took away from this. It also played into Meg's whininess, but I think it is that realization. And I think the buildup does happen because, like, as a young kid, you see your parents as maybe superheroes, maybe just they got their, stuff together. They, can do whatever, they have their stuff handled. And then Meg realizes, no, dad doesn't have his self together. Like, dad made really dumb choices. Dad did stuff that he probably shouldn't have. And now he can't get me out of it. He can't be my hero.
Right. And he never ends up being the hero at all.
Yeah. Yeah. In any aspect.
He's not. He gets back and he's just like, I'm going to go see my wife. And he's done nothing useful.
Yeah.
Nothing at all.
So, like, for me, like, I think I would love to actually find out if Leigh Engel had like a moment in her life where her father disappointed her and like this was like her writing it in there. Because I could understand like how that comes to pass. What annoys me is how Meg just ruminates on the fact that father isn't doing like what she wants him to do. Like, she pushes everybody to be like, no, we have to go find father. He's going to make it all better. We have to go find him. She whines and cries about getting there. And then once they're there and they find him, which, happens in a couple pages, and they free him because, that has to be really quick. Then it's like, oh, well, now he just doesn't, get us out just as quickly. And she's whining about, well, why isn't he doing this? Why is this, he's not saving, Charles Wallace. He's not doing this. It's like, I would have loved maybe just a little bit more of that discussion of, yeah, like, even if like when Meg was made the decision to, be the hero, if there had been a conversation between her and maybe one of the Mrs. W's where it was like, you know what, Meg, adults don't have the power to do everything. They don't have superpowers. Sometimes you have to find the strength in yourself to do things.
And there you go. There's her reason for going and saving her brother.
Exactly. And there's also that reason where it's like, because I felt like she really treated her dad crummy. Like, he's just a human being. Like, he made a decision. Like, was it great? No. Was it, helpful in any way? No. But you know what? Like, that's people. People are mistakes, like, you can't. I feel like I wish she would have learned quicker that her dad was valuable and that she has to like let that go. And she can't expect him to, be Superman her entire life.
Well, the weird thing about it is we're going through this book assuming like we know we're going to go rescue dad. Mm-hmm. But I think all of us were under the assumption that we're going to rescue dad and defeat the Black Thing.
Yes.
And we did not end up defeating the Black Thing at all. So what we ended up having was just this young girl who's really pissed at her dad and trying to work through that. And that's our like climax of the story. And it was for me, incredibly ineffective.
Yeah.
Like, he was a bad character. She was a whiny girl. There was no impetus for her doing what she did. The Black Thing didn't get defeated in the end. And then all of a sudden we're back on Earth.
And I don't even think they defeated it. Like, they didn't do anything. They just got out of there.
Meg overpowered him with love. Like, basically she confused it.
But like, she didn't rescue the planet. Like, the planet's still going to be taken over, once it gets itself together. Like, all they were able to do was get out of there, pretty much. Like, yeah, they all got out in one piece. Hooray. But like, nothing happened. There was no battle, right. And yeah, it there was also no point, and this is probably because the end was so rushed. Like, there was no time for her to sit with her father to like work this stuff out,
right?
And like, I feel like if you put that in, that might have helped a little bit. Like, this whole like, even him telling her, like, I made a mistake, but I'm trying, to fix it. I had to leave Charles Wallace there. He was too, you know.
I think he did try to make those points to Meg.
But maybe
she was not having it. She was so resistant to it the whole time. I think that really, yeah, I mean, you just never get any resolution between the two of them. I mean, once she makes the decision to go save her brother herself, then she's kind of like, oh, yeah, like dad couldn't have done this, so fine.
Yeah, and what bothered me was the line was like, she smiled as a way of apology. Like, no, like, I'm sorry. Also, like, if you treated me like that, your smile is not going to do anything. Like, I'm still going to be a little annoyed. Like,
yeah.
I'm doing what I can do.
He probably felt so guilty as is because he left his kids for a long time. They've been looking for him. He already has to feel bad that he made a stupid decision and ended up on some random weird planet. So she's just basically rubbing salt into a wound. And yeah, there's no resolution. It's kind of not a very positive way to leave a father-daughter relationship.
Not at all. And yeah, because the ending was so rushed that you don't get a lot of the, you know, conclusions that you want. You don't get any of that explanation or, you know, discussion between characters even. Especially, like, it bothered me that the last couple, like, what was it? Like, for one or two chapters, at least the one chapter with Aunt Beast, like, Meg couldn't move or talk, you know? And it was like, well, this is silly, you know, like your main character can't do anything. Everything's just happening around her rather than her interacting with anything. And it was just like, it was very frustrating because also Meg has these, you know, filters on where she's like mad at dad and mad at, you know, why isn't things getting done? And why don't we just call, you know, Mrs. What's it and she'll make it all better. It's like, and that was also frustrating because like even up to the last minute, like Meg didn't realize that other people can't necessarily always make things better.
Right. Right. I think that's a thing that I'm like the speed of the book as opposed to what we're going to see in the movie. That's something that I think is going to be greatly addressed mm-hmm. in film as opposed to this book. Because I know that every single person read this book, every cast member did, the director read it, everybody involved read it and said, there's a pacing issue in this book.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, how are we going to fix this when we put this on the screen? And I'm sure we're going to spend a lot of time in all the beautiful settings that we come across in the book. We're going to spend time in all those places. But I'm sure there's going to be a better payoff and a better arc overall. Mm. If there's not, then I don't know. That might not be a very good ending to the movie. But I would think that the movie is going to address that in a big way.
Yeah. And I think the movie will also address father's character, because I mean, first of all, you don't cast Chris Pine to have him in there for as short as father is in there, and also the fact that the book does give you the story through Meg's point of view, like obviously you don't have that necessarily in the movie, so you'll be able to kind of explore more of father's feelings and motivations and everything, you know, just a bit better in the movie.
Yeah, so yeah, it was definitely super rushed, but I think the movie will do a better job overall.
It better.
Yeah, I hope so. The second half of Jennifer's question was the casting choices for the movie, like how we feel about those things. I know we just talked about Chris Pine a little bit, so I think we're gonna have more Mr. Murray.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. The only other thing I have any feeling about one way or the other is Zach Galifianakis as the happy medium.
Yeah,
we talked about that a little bit in the group, but I think that's going to be a fun, I mean, I don't know which way they're going to take it. Maybe Zach Galifianakis plays it totally straight. In my experience, that's probably not what's going to happen. And I think that's a good direction to take it because the character in the book is kind of like quirky and easy to like be a little bit bipolar in behavior. And we could get a good comedic character out of that.
Yeah, I think that'll be a good one. I think the casting for the other ones kind of work because Oprah as Mrs. Witch, you kind of get that. I mean, Mrs. Witch is, she's ethereal for most of it, you know, like
she's like between planes.
Yeah. So like being kind of, I don't know how Oprah's going to play it, but I almost feel like she's going to be more like regal, you know, kind of like standoffish. Although she is one of the ones that gives Meg a lot of motivational speeches in the trailer, so I don't know. she definitely has more lines than Mrs. Witch in the book. So I feel like they are changing the characters a lot from the book to the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're relying on the, like, the speech quirk for her specifically.
Yeah.
It seems like they're just letting Oprah talk like Oprah, which is probably good, because I don't know how you would play that. Like, how would you act that, the way that it's written out in the book with the long consonants and all of that?
Yeah, it would probably come off as just being too weird, unless you did an auto-tune kind of thing, but I think it's fine to just leave that out completely. I think that would be weird in the movie.
Right.
The other casting, I don't know, nothing really stuck out to me as like, oh, this is great, or oh, this is bad. Like, it's just all something more for me on how they write the character of Meg. I already think from the trailers that they've changed her a bit from the book. So in a good way, though. So I'm looking forward to that. And I've avoided most other trailers, so I couldn't really tell you anymore.
Yeah, I watched a little bit today. I mean, I think everybody seems fine. The casting is great, but I'm more interested in the world building stuff, which is something that Rachel Craig actually asked us about. Mm-hmm. She, you know, wanted to know what we thought about the world building in this book. And we did talk about that a little bit, too. There are some awesome settings in the book, and I cannot wait to see how those translate to the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is definitely your sci-fi fantasy elements at work. I think even just the colors that we see in the trailer, like, you're going to see a lot of pop. My most intriguing part, I wonder how they're going to deal with the planet that Aunt Beast was on, like that muted planet. I told Courtney in the beginning, I would skip over how names are spelled out in sci-fi fantasy books if I can't pronounce them. So pardon me if I get this wrong. I think it was like Ixil or something like that.
Yeah, it was like an I and an X and some stuff.
Yeah. So that planet. Because that planet basically was full of creatures who were blind, and you got more description of how things felt, a lot of things, how they felt, mm-hmm. Some smells. And, you know, I wonder if they're going to go with that on in the movie, because I feel like it plays really well in the book, but I don't know if that plays really well in a visual medium, you know?
I bet the focus will be on making it an exceptionally beautiful space, mm-hmm. because it's a planet full of creatures who wouldn't like take advantage of that necessarily, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They're not fixated on that kind of thing. I don't know. I guess if I was directing it, that's how I would do it. But I don't know. I mean, it could also just be a really like barren space, because that's not what the focus is.
And that's how it's described in the book. It's like muted. There's like grays and browns and stuff. And like the creatures don't even get the concept of light and dark. You know, day and night is distinguished by warmth and cold. You know, like the sun is out, so it's warm, or it's away and it's cold. Like,
right.
So, I mean, I think it would be interesting, but I don't know how that goes. I mean, I looked at IMDb. I don't see a character there named Aunt Beast. There are a couple of actors on there that are unnamed completely. So I don't know if that's for a reason, if it's like a voice actress or something, because it's CG.
I think it would be a real shame if they didn't have Aunt Beast in the movie, because I think visually that's, aside from, I can't remember who changes into what, but we have the horse beast. One of the misses turns into a horse beast.
Mrs. Whatsit does.
Whatsit turns into the horse beast. I think that's going to be really interesting to see on the screen.
Yeah.
And I think this is the other character that I'm most interested to see fleshed out. So it would be a real shame if they cut her from the movie.
I wonder if they cut her or just change it significantly, because again, like, and I don't know, I don't have like a good film background to say like, oh, this is how you would, you know, do a purely, you know, a space that doesn't rely on sight, you know, in a, mm-hmm. in a visual medium. Cause I mean, you're seeing it. I think it'd
be interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It could be very, very interesting to be able to like to put a vision to something that is purely based on feeling. Mm. To be able to create that would be really interesting. I'm really excited to see if they take them to the 2D planet for 1 second.
Yes. Yeah, that would be interesting. I do think that Leigh Engel does do a good job of world building. I almost feel like she does better at that than characters.
100%.
She definitely gets, you know, how to describe a space and how to come up with fantastical things. But when it comes to the interpersonal relationships, you know, especially coming off Black Panther, where like the character development was so good. And this is just like, not so good.
Yeah. And that was Rachel's other question, was who our favorite characters were. And I really feel like for me, I loved Aunt Beast. Mm-hmm. I also loved, my other favorite character was Charles Wallace. And I think the reason for that is because Charles Wallace is, in my opinion, really the only character that gets a real arc in this book. He goes through stuff, like he goes through trials, you know, everybody else, just the explanations given for what's going on with those people and, or what's not going on with those people. There's just not, for me, much in the way of character building.
Okay, and my only counter to that, because I agree that he probably has the most development, I don't think he learns his lesson, though. I don't think he learns that he can't be, like, this, I don't even know what the word is, like, this little, like, he's know-it-all. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anybody in this book learns their lesson, so I don't know if that matters much to me. I just think the most happens with him as a whole. And that's not character development necessarily. That's just plot devices. So I don't know. I think the most happens to him. So he's the most interesting to me. And I just kind of liked Aunt Beast because I thought she was cute. And I like the ideas behind that whole planet too.
Yeah. I felt like that planet was a big part of Meg's growth, and I feel like if they put that in the movie, like that's going to be the point where she grows the most, because that's kind of where you learn, it's a very subtle message, but it's a subtle message that sight doesn't necessarily matter, therefore appearance doesn't necessarily matter. You know, it's more that, like, you know, how you experience things, you know, everyone experiences it differently. I feel like there's a lot there that they can go with a little bit more.
Maybe that's our payoff with the focus on appearance at the beginning. Like, maybe that's where we kind of get our redemption of all that crap.
Maybe. I feel like we might learn it, but Meg doesn't. Like,
no.
And that's even more frustrating, because I feel like she is so preoccupied with that in the beginning. Because, yeah, I think there were, like, a couple of quotes, too. Like, you had brought one up during one of our discussions where, you know, it explicitly says that, you know, your appearance doesn't matter. You know, it was very specific in that. But again, like, Meg doesn't learn a lesson, you know. And I think Calvin is probably the most underused character.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's given some pretty good tools, that his tool of communication. I mean, as adults, we know that the tool of communication is important and useful, but I don't know that that's ever super fleshed out for him or used.
It's like half used when he starts like quoting the Tempest and right. stuff like that. But yeah, like, again, it's not fully used, and I don't think it's fully realized, like, this is his gift and this is how he can, you know, defeat the Black Thing or anything with this, you know, like, there is no, you know, and it's almost like, again, you're reading the first half of a series, but there was no guarantee in her mind that she was getting a series from this, which is more frustrating, because it's like, how did you even think like this was gonna fly and not have anything for another decade?
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. But we have that information at the back of the book. Do you have the cast of characters in the back of your book, Melissa?
I don't know. Mine's on a Kindle and it's with the five books, and I'm really bad at flipping through a Kindle like that.
Oh, it's like at the end, she has like a family tree, like kind of like you would get with Game of Thrones or whatever.
Okay.
Like have the family lines. And it turns out that Calvin and Meg end up getting married, and then they have children. And then she has this whole graph in here. So I'm feeling like she did not assume at all that she was going to get more books, but she wanted to have some way of like wrapping up what happened afterward. But she should have done it in the freaking book. I mean, that's what the book's for. I just feel like this was like, these were the reports I did in high school where I spent all this time right at the beginning, like writing really carefully and crafting beautiful sentences, and then it was due in 2 days and I wasn't done, so I rushed the end of the paper.
Yeah, or it's like, oh no, I hit a page limit. They don't want me to go over the end,
Yeah, there's no form, no real form to it, no real climax, no real come down from that. It's, yeah, I don't know. Overall, I'm not sure that I'm not sure how much I enjoyed this one.
Yeah, and it's so crazy because so many people, when we initially brought it up, were like, oh yeah, I read that in high school, I read that in school. And some people, said that they liked it or remember liking it. And I just wonder, because bringing this story to like a movie exec and being like, I want to make a movie out of this, like, you've got to have some notes, like, going in, like, this is what we're changing, this is what we're ripping out. Either that or the movie exec has no idea what the book is about and just like, sure, yeah, go do whatever you want. Because, like,
Yeah, I would be interested to see what Jennifer's daughter, like her whole feelings about it at the end. I would like to know overall how she felt, because I think reading this as a child, it would be a lot more interesting because you're not going to necessarily catch those inconsistencies and flaws that we catch because we've read like things like Game of Thrones, where you have these overly fleshed out character stories. And maybe that's too much. Maybe let's not go with Game of Thrones. Let's go with Harry Potter. So you have like fully fleshed out stories, so we have a little bit more experience in that way of maybe what to expect from a well-written book. So maybe from a kid's perspective, it doesn't read the same way. I don't know.
I don't know, but I think one of the biggest missteps in the book is the ending, because they just dump them all on Earth. We start to get an explanation from Mrs. What's It, and then the three of them are like taken away in a gust of wind, which does lead to the next book because it's called A Wind in the Door. But again, didn't know she was going to get that book. So you don't get any explanation about what or who the Mrs. W's were. You don't get any explanation or conclusion with it and the black thing. And you don't even get anything with like the main three that you were following. Like, is Charles Wallace affected? Like, or is he completely fine now? Did love heal all? Like, Calvin's gonna go back to school and be friends with Meg now? Like, what's going on? Like, I don't know. If I was a kid, I'd be like, that's it.
Yeah, I kind of think that too. That's why I wonder if this graph that is in my book was part of the original publishing. I'm guessing it was. So, I mean, you know that like Meg and Calvin stay together and get married and have kids. So, I mean, at least there's some resolution in that way. But like, I would much rather have a prologue where I at least get some loose ends tied up. And I mean, you can do that in 4 pages. You can do a prologue in 4 pages. Tie up some loose ends, at least give you some sort of resolution.
Yeah, an epilogue, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
No, I agree. Like, yeah, just something, even if you wanted to do an epilogue where it was like 5 years later or something, like, give me something. Give me, like, is this fight really going on? Like, is the dark thing now gonna hone in on the Earth? Because we know that we've been fighting it, but we haven't been successful because it's not fully defeated, but we haven't lost because our planet isn't completely dark. So it's like, are we just still in the stalemate? Are these three people going to make a difference now? Like, there is no nothing.
It's like it's a very like I guess, self-centered story, because it really ends up only being about that family, the Murray family specifically. That's all it's about in the long run. You don't get the resolution with the black thing. All you get is the resolution within the family, and you expect the whole time to get the resolution with the black thing, and it just never comes.
Yeah, because they build it up again in the beginning, all the beginning building, where it's like, no, no, it's bigger than your father, it's bigger than, you know, you guys, and then it's like, but not really. Like,
well, yeah, and what, like, why do they take the kids out to see that thing, like, to very clearly see it and to understand what it is, if that's not going to be something that's going to end up being resolved in the long run?
Yeah, because they didn't even have to necessarily have this other entity, because it was like the real quote unquote like enemy in this one. It had the father, it had Charles Wallace. You know, the only thing that was kind of preventing them from going to the planet, you know, by tessering to the planet easily, was the black thing. But I mean, you could have just written it as, well, it has a force field around the planet that prevents the Mrs. W's from getting to the planet easily. And like that, that's it. Like,
yeah, it just ends up being an afterthought entirely.
Yeah. For something that could have been like a really big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Overall, the book was meh.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't hate it. It was a quick read. There was stuff about it that I really liked. There are characters and moments that I enjoyed. Every character had moments I enjoyed. Mm. And there were some beautiful worlds. I can't wait to see how it translates to screen. I think Ava DuVernay is going to do a really good job with this. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the movie and then comparing and contrasting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know that I would read this again.
I mean, I'm interested in reading the next couple books because I do want to see where the story goes. Like, again, she's a good world builder. She built a really interesting world. Her relationships between the characters were meh, but I got caught up in the worlds, so that was good. And yeah, now I want to see how they bring these worlds to the big screen and how they, and I kind of like the fact that now we have, you know, this is a female protagonist brought to us by a female writer, and now we're getting a female director to kind of interpret this in her way. So I hope that all the hopes that I had for the book can now be realized in the movie by another female voice.
Yeah. And I think they will be, but, you know, we'll just have to wait, like, 10 days-ish, and we'll see.
Yeah. And then we'll see. Yeah, so let's call that our first DMH book club discussion.
Hooray. And our next book will be The Wind in the Willows.
Yeah, Wind in the Willows. It's free on Kindle. There are a couple different versions, some of them like 95 cents, dollar, whatever, but there is a free one. There are also, you can go to the library, or you can go to the bookstore if they have it. It's a classic, so I'm sure they'll have it. And there was a mention of an abridged version, an unabridged version. I'm just going with the free one that's on Kindle. It doesn't say that it's abridged or unabridged. Courtney, have you gotten a chance to look?
I didn't see anywhere on the free one whether it was abridged or unabridged. So that might be something we need to look into further. But if we have a link for the free Kindle version, so we'll post that again in the Facebook group. And if you just want to read along with that, you can get the Kindle app for free. So you can just, you know, download that and just read along with that. And, you know, we might try to find that information too, to see if we can figure out if it's abridged or unabridged.
Yeah, we'll specify it in the group. But yeah, the Kindle app is free on your phones, your tablets. And if you have a Kindle, obviously, you can find the book there for free. So until next time, say goodnight, Courtney.
Good night, Courtney.
Good night, Alyssa. Good night, DMH Book Club. I just found the keys to a city. The beats are big and the lights are